All right, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning Bible study. It's good to be here with you today. We are at the end of the season of Passover. So things are winding down according to the biblical calendar in the season of Passover. According to the Jewish calendar, today is the eighth day of Passover. And so I wanted to give you a class today that is associated with the season. So it's one of my favorite topics. I happen to notice that Baruch, our good friend John, has posted some of the notes from previous classes. I saw those notes after I put my class together, and I'm pleased to tell you that if you think you know every single verse that I'm going to put together in today's class, you might be mistaken. Because it does look like, even though over the years I've taught this material, that a lot of this is arranged differently and it's presented in a different way. And I'm excited, I can tell you, I'm excited to teach this class. And so sit back, get a Bible, blow the dust off of it, get ready to go through quite a few of the prophets. And we're going to go through some material today that I think is very beneficial. The class will be very informative of that, I am certain. My previous two classes associated with the season of Passover this year, 2 weeks ago, I talked about Eliyahu, about Elijah the prophet, and about the fact that according to the prophet, the prophetic book Malachi, we mentioned that it may not be a prophet named Malachi, but Malachi means my messenger. So, but I covered this interesting passage at the end of Malachi, and this passage talks about before the great and terrible day of Jehovah, that he will send Elijah the prophet. Now, Elijah has this task. We talked about it 2 weeks ago, and one of the things that I brought out is that this is at least one passage in the prophetic literature that indicates that there are at times possibility, there are options. Remember, this particular passage at the end of Malachi says that Elijah will come and he will restore the hearts of the children to the fathers and the fathers to the children, or as the Hebrew puts it, lest, or the English puts it, lest I come and smite the earth or the land, as however you read that, with a harem, a devotion, a ban to total destruction. So we talked about how the prophet Elijah will come, and we covered that quite extensively in that class. And then last week, I had another opportunity to speak on a theme associated with Passover, and I called that one the Exodus and the Making of God's Name. In that particular class, I covered two basic categories of text. One was on this idea, as the title suggests, that it was the Passover, the Exodus, in fact, in which God used this event to make a name for himself. And we covered various texts throughout the Hebrew Bible that indicated specifically that. There were quite a few of those texts, if you remember. We went through a lot of them. The other point in last week's class, and I'm bringing all this up because these tie together. The three classes ultimately come together and paint sort of a picture for us if we pay attention. For those of you who have eyes to see, let's put it that way. The other thing that I tied into last week's class is that the very name of God, Jehovah, is associated with the Exodus, if you will, where over and over, and we went through quite a few of the examples where in the Hebrew Bible it says, I am the God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And we went through quite a few of those so that you would get that point. Now, the Exodus is what I'm focusing on. So today's class is somewhat of an Exodus part two. It may not be the best title, but last week I talked about the Exodus. This week I'm talking about the Exodus. We might even talk about Exodus in the plural. So you could say Exoduses, if that's proper. I'm not sure if that wouldn't be Exodi or something like that in the plural, but someone can look that up and email me. I appreciate the input. But one of the things that I want to stress is that the Exodus, one of the things that the Exodus did was, in a sense, God broke the chains of slavery off of the children of Israel, which were owned by Pharaoh. In other words, the bondage to Egypt in the iron furnace, that bondage is over with the Exodus. Now, I wanted to shift gears in this week's class, but I'm going to give you a little bit of a background before I do so that it all makes sense. The Passover, the Exodus, the great deliverance from Egypt, the miraculous events, you know, you can go through your mind and you can think about all the great things that happened as they left Egypt. All of that led up to one event. You can look back and you can read how everything is leading the children of Israel to one event, as is, in my opinion, the season of Passover. That event is Sinai, called Horeb by the book of Deuteronomy, with one exception. But it's Sinai and Horeb that everything leads to. So I want you to go with me this morning. I want to begin, in a way, at the beginning in Exodus chapter 3 to set the stage for what I will be doing in today's class. Now, this particular passage in Exodus chapter 3 is called the story of the bush. You remember the story of the burning bush where God meets with Moses for the first time. And after he tells him that he's going to send him on this mission, Moses says, "Who am I that I should go?" And if you look beginning in verse 12, I just want to read Exodus 3:12. "And he said," now this is Jehovah speaking, "and he said, certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token to thee, a sign that I have sent you. When you hast brought the people out of Mitzrayim, out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon this mountain." You shall serve God upon this mountain. Now, over and over in the story leading up to this event at Sinai, which this points towards, when Moses and Aaron would go into Pharaoh, they would use this phrase, "Shalaketami," send forth my people, or let my people go. Now, one of the other things that constantly comes up in the narrative is the idea that there is a reason for Pharaoh to let them go, and that reason is that they may serve me. All right, so I brought this up last week. I touched on it. The idea is Israel, who was a slave to Pharaoh, is still going to be a slave, still going to be a servant, but they will no longer be a servant to Pharaoh. So the message basically to the king of Egypt is, let my people go. In other words, they don't belong to you. They're not going to serve you any longer. They're going to serve me. Now you think about the boldness of this request, and you realize why Pharaoh strengthens his resolve, which is basically what the Hebrew means. His heart was hardened, but it says over and over that he made it strong. Just like when you make up your mind to do something, I don't know if you're like this, but some are like this. When you make up your mind to do something and nothing will deter you, in fact, other arguments or other points, in fact, I do know some of you are like this, only strengthens your resolve. You're not willing to budge, right? So this is the idea that we get there. No longer, here's the point, no longer would Israel serve Egypt from Sinai. From Sinai, it becomes very clear that Israel is to be the servant of Jehovah. Now, because it's at Sinai, here at Sinai, that, let's just put it this way, that they're brought into a covenant in a most dramatic way, a most dramatic way. And let's just say it like it is. Jehovah came down. All right. Now, I want you to go with me to kick off today's class to the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 33, Deuteronomy chapter 33. And I want to begin in verse 1. And this is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel before his death. And he said, Jehovah came from Sinai and rose up from Seir to them. He shone forth from Mount Paran, and he came from holy multitudes. From his right hand went a fiery law for them. Truly he loves the peoples. All his holy ones are in your hand, and they sat down at your feet. Everyone shall receive of your words. Moses commanded us a Torah, the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob, and he was king in Yeshurun, when the heads of the people and the tribes of Israel were gathered together. This idea is something that I think is central that we're going to focus on today. Jehovah came from Sinai. Notice, this is not about a Messiah. I want you to really, really get that. This is not about a messianic figure coming on the clouds. This is not about some prophet who stands before the people in all his splendor, empowered by the Spirit of God. What we're talking about at Sinai is a manifestation of Jehovah into the human realm. It is the single most dramatic event in all of human history. Hands down, you might call this the first coming of the Lord, if by the Lord you mean Jehovah. All right. Now, in verse 2, it says that he delivers to them what is called a fiery law in this particular translation. This, by the way, is the Koran translation. In Hebrew, the word there is esh dat. Esh being fire, dat is a word for a law, a rule, if you will. So I want to focus on this aspect of it just for a moment, but I don't want to leave until I touch one more time on this point. Moses, it says in the text that I just read, commanded us a Torah, which is what the Bible calls an inheritance for Jacob. In Hebrew, the word inheritance is morashah. You could spell it in English, M-O-R-A-S-H-A, morashah. We're going to come back to that. It will really stand out in the lesson today, so stick with me on that. Now, again, this event is unequal to anything else that has ever happened in the history of humanity, in the history of mankind. I want to cover just a few points so that the Bible can prove it and you don't have to just trust me. Deuteronomy chapter 4, and I just want to begin in verse 32. If you will join me, Deuteronomy 4, verse 32. I have a lot of text to cover today, by the way. For ask now of the days that are past, which were before thee since the day that God created man upon the earth, and from one side of heaven to the other, whether there has been any such thing as this great thing is. Notice, this is called the great thing. I like that. It's a big thing. It's a big thing now, I'm telling you. Jehovah comes down, right? Or whether aught has been heard like it. Verse 33, did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire as you have heard and live?
Or has God ventured to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation, by trials, by signs, by wonders, by war, by a mighty hand, and by a stretched out arm, and by great terrors, according to all that Jehovah your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? To you it was shown, that you might know that Jehovah, Hu Ha Elohim, he is God, there is none else beside him. Out of heaven he made thee hear his voice, that he might instruct thee, and upon earth he showed you his great fire. And you did hear his words out of the midst of the fire, and because he loved your fathers, therefore, he chose their seed after them and brought you out, he himself being present, interesting point, with his mighty power out of Egypt to drive out nations from before thee, greater and mightier than you are, to bring you in, to give you their land for an inheritance as it is this day. By the way, at this point, they're not in the land. They haven't driven the inhabitants out. Notice it says, as it is this day. Interesting. Not for today's class, but interesting nonetheless. Know therefore this day, and consider it in your heart, that Jehovah is God in heaven above and upon the earth beneath. There is no other. You shall therefore keep his statutes, his commandments, which I command you this day, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may prolong your days upon the earth which Jehovah gives, your God gives you forever. Now, you can read this text today, as it is this day, and it's still as it is this day. Ask, go ahead. Ask, has anything like this ever happened? Has a God ever spoke to an entire assembled nation at the foot of a mountain? No. From the fire and people live through it? Has a God ever taken a people with a strong arm and an outstretched arm? No. This still stands. Go with me back up to verse 11, chapter 4. I'm going to kind of touch on this event a little bit more. Chapter 4, verse 11 of Deuteronomy. And you came near and stood under the mountain. Techat, some people translate that at the foot of the mountain. And the mountain burned with fire to the heart of heaven with darkness, clouds and thick darkness. And Jehovah spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of the word, saw no form, only a voice. And he declared to you his covenant. Notice his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, the 10 words. And he wrote them upon two tablets of stone, two tablets of stone. Now, look at chapter 5, Deuteronomy. I'm just going to go through a few of these to make a point. Deuteronomy 5, 22. It's verse 19 in the Hebrew, by the way. Deuteronomy 5, 22 in English, 5, 19 in the Hebrew. These words Jehovah spoke to all your assembly in the mountain, out of the midst of fire, the cloud, the thick darkness, with a great voice, which was not heard again. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Let's see. And he wrote them on two tablets of stone and delivered them to me. Where it says, which was not heard again, probably a better translation. And he added nothing. And he added nothing. But see, we have translations, which are theological sometimes, that tweak things just a little bit. So here's the point. What God spoke out of the fire, which was ultimately written with his finger on tablets of stone and handed to Moses, is called the 10 words. It's called the covenant. And it says, and he added no more. Now, we're going to continue down this path for a couple of moments. I'm not teaching the full class on this subject, but I do want to touch a couple of passages. Go to Exodus 31, 18. Exodus 31, 18. And it says the following. And he gave to Moses, when he had made an end of speaking to him upon Mount Sinai, two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written with the finger of God. Now, this particular set of tablets, it cannot be underemphasized that that which is upon it was written with God's finger. All right? Now, it's called the testimony, the edut. I'm associating the edut with the eshdat, the fire law. This is the fire law. Just like, I don't know if it's just like, but I love Charlton Heston's version, Cecil B. DeMille, where the fire comes down and starts writing on the tablets. I don't think they were that big because the Bible says that Moses carried them in his hand, singular. But, you know, whatever. I think it's more like an iPad size. Might have even been somewhat of an iPad. Doesn't have to be some archaic rock with scratches on it. We're talking about the God of creation. All right, now look at Exodus 32, verse 15. And 32:15 says the following, "And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand, tablets written on both their sides. On the one side and on the other were they written, and the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved upon the tablets." Now look at chapter 34, chapter 34 of Exodus, verse 28. Now, I'm not getting into the point that there are two sets, you know, he breaks one and so forth. Just stick with me. I'm talking about the edut, the testimony. And it says in verse 28, "And he, Moses, was there with Jehovah 40 days, 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water. And he wrote upon the tablets the words of the covenant." What's written on the two tablets? The words of the covenant. Let's be specific. The 10 words. "And it came to pass when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of testimony in Moses' hand," one hand, "when he came down from the mountain, Moses knew not that the face of his skin shone while he talked with him." So here we go. The eshdat, the fire law. Now, the fire law, the testimony, is going to be placed into a box, right? It's going to be placed into a beautiful box that is later referred to as the Ark of the Covenant, or more accurate, according to the biblical text, the Ark of the Testimony. In fact, in one place it's called the Ark for the Testimony. But nonetheless, it's a box. It's a beautiful box. It's a nicely decorated box. And within that is this fire law, which is the covenant that God made with the people. Remember, everything about this leads up to Sinai. They were slaves of another. God breaks those chains, brings them into a covenant, which makes them his servants. And that covenant is written on two tables of stone called the tablets of the testimony. Now, I want you to look with me to Exodus 25. I want to just show you, read to you about how beautiful this lovely box was. Exodus 25, beginning in verse 10. "And they shall make an ark of shittim wood. 2 cubits and a half shall be its length, 1 cubit and a half its breadth, 1 cubit and a half its height. You shall overlay it with pure gold. Inside and outside you shall overlay it, and you shall make upon it a rim of gold round about, and you shall cast 4 rings of gold for it and put them in its 4 corners. And 2 rings shall be on the one side of it, 2 rings on the other. And you shall make poles of shittim wood and overlay them with gold. And you shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark, that the ark may be carried therewith. The poles shall be in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it." All right. "And you shall put into the ark the testimony which I will give you. And you shall make a covering of pure gold, 2 cubits and a half its length, 1 cubit and a half its breadth. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold, beaten work, shall you make them at the two ends of the covering. Make one keruv on the one end and the other keruv on the other. And the covering shall you make the keruvim on two ends of it. And the keruvim shall stretch out their wings on high, overspreading the covering with their wings, and their faces shall look one to another. Toward the covering shall the faces of the keruvim be. You shall put the covering above upon the ark, and it shall, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I shall give you. And there I will meet with you. This is an important place. Listen to this. And I will speak with you from above the covering, from above the two keruvim, which are upon the ark of the testimony, of all the things which I give you in commandment to the children of Israel. So this is a central piece of the tabernacle. It is, you might say, the central piece in the tabernacle. What we have is, we have the testimony, the Eidut, the fire law, the Eshdat, the covenant, the 10 words, sometimes erroneously called the 10 commandments. If you count them, there are actually more than 10 commandments in the 10 commandments. So it's not really the 10 commandments, it's the 10 matters, the 10 words, the 10 things. And notice it begins, I am Jehovah your God who brought you forth from the land of Egypt, right? He's associating the covenant with that brilliant, that wonderful event. It's who he is. It's what made a name for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, by the way, this Ark of the Testimony, there's only one thing in that box, and I want to show you that. In 1 Kings, chapter 8, 1 Kings chapter 8, and verse 9, 1 Kings 8, 9, says this very clearly. There was nothing in the ark except the two tablets of stone which Moses put there at Horeb when Jehovah made a covenant with the children of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. All right, that is repeated. So that was 1 Kings 8, 9. It's also in 2 Chronicles 5:10. Exactly the same thing. It's like if you said, what's in the Ark of the Covenant? The covenant. What's in the Ark of the Testimony? The testimony. You see, it's the Ark for the testimony. So what else is in there? Nada, nothing, zilch. Now, just because I have to bring this up, you look it up on your own, the writer of Hebrews in the Christian scriptures, Hebrews 9:4, puts a lot of other stuff in there. But according to the Hebrew Bible, the only thing that's in there is that for which it is made. It doesn't have a rod that butted in a box of matzah or anything else in it. Nothing else in there. It's a box that's created for the very purpose of holding the testimony, the covenant, the 10 words, the 10 commandments, as they're called. Understand. Everything about the Passover brings us to the making of a covenant, the sealing of the deal, if you will. Here we go. The ark possessed great power. You remember the stories where, in fact, in the book of Numbers, chapter, is it 9 or 10, where they would even say, they thought of this as the throne of Jehovah. They would bring it into battle. Enemies in the neighborhood began to get nervous when the ark would show up. The ark, the box, this powerful testimony which it contained, it began to represent, if you do a study on the ark of the testimony, you'll see that it actually begins to represent Jehovah in many texts. Sometimes you're reading about the ark and it sounds like you're talking about Jehovah, vice versa, see? So the ark is very, very important, represented the throne of Jehovah. The Exodus, with all its miracles, the plagues, the defeat of the Egyptians. Remember, we're told basically that God defeated the Egyptian gods through these plagues. So it's really a smiting of the gods of Egypt is what the plagues are. The splitting of the sea. Up until now, as I speak, These events are universally associated with God's name and with his mighty deeds. And then the Eidot, the very covenant that God made with the people of Israel, written upon the stones with the finger of God on both sides, on this side and on that side that's placed in. All of these go together. These things are all part of the greatest story ever told. Now, please listen to me. While these things are all part of the greatest story ever told, they are all also part of a story that will not be told forever. Let me say that again. These are all the covenant, the ark, the Exodus, the Eidot. These are all part of the greatest story ever told. But they are also part of a story that will not be told forever. Today on the Jewish calendar, welcome to our class. Today is the eighth day of Passover. There is a special reading for the day. The focus of the day and the readings is on a future deliverance, a future deliverance. It's called, in Hebrew, in Jewish writings, they refer to it by using a word, atid, atid. Sometimes you'll see various times people will use this phrase. It generally means, in rabbinic literature and so forth, It comes across in various contexts. It means future, coming. It can mean standing ready, even destined. Even destined. So the idea is that the latid, the atid Pesach, or the coming Passover, is what I'm going to be talking about. But I'm not doing this just because I came up with this idea. In synagogues around the world today on Shabbat, on the eighth day of Passover, if they are following their own designated readings, they too will be talking about a future Passover. So like a lot of people might join in and join our class this morning and go, why can't we just talk about the Passover like all the Jewish people are talking about and just leave it at that? It's the greatest thing God ever did, because today is the day that we look forward to the coming Exodus. The coming Exodus. Now, there is a special prophet reading associated with this particular Sabbath, and I'm going to give you, I'm not going to read it all, but I'm going to give you the passages that are associated with the eighth day of Passover, and it is Isaiah chapter 10, verse 32, through Isaiah chapter 12, verse 6. Now, anyone who knows their Hebrew Bible, who knows their prophets, are going to go, wow, that contains Isaiah chapter 11. Isaiah chapter 11 is the messianic, notice I'm going to put it in air quotes, messianic age passage. That's the premier. That is the top. I mean, everybody knows Isaiah 11 is talking about the messianic age, the age to come. And this particular passage is read on this day. So here's what I am going to do. I am going to ask you to go with me to Isaiah chapter 11. Look at that. My Bible just flops open to Isaiah 11. I think I've gone there before. Isaiah 11, we're going to begin in verse 11. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord, and that in Hebrew is Adonai, that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people that shall be left from Ashur, from Egypt, from Patros, from Cush, from Elam, from Shinar, from Hamat, and from the isles of the sea. All right? And he shall set up a banner for the nations and shall assemble the outcast of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. The envy also of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not vex Ephraim. All right, verse 14. But they shall fly upon the shoulders of the Philistine toward the sea. They shall spoil the children of the east together. They shall lay their hand upon Edom and Moab, and the children of Ammon shall obey them. And Jehovah shall utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt, and with his scorching wind he'll shake his hand over the river, smite it in seven streams, and men will go over dry shod. And there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Ashur, as there was for Israel in the day he came up out of the land of Egypt. Now, I want to give you a couple of my comments on this particular passage. Some of these I want you to just think about. He's going to put his hand forth a second time again. What does that mean? Does it not imply that he has done sort of reached out his hand once before? Yeah. If he's doing it a second time, he did it a first time. And here's the idea. This is what gets me. People read right over this. If I had a soft red and blue pencil, I would highlight that word second and that word again, indicating that something happened previously that was oriented towards assembling and gathering this group of people. Now, notice that it's from the four corners of the earth. In other words, this group that is going to be assembled and gathered are scattered everywhere. Now, the other thing is that I want you to notice that you'll see that these people who are coming back are going to be going over dry shod. Streams are being split open. And the people are going over dry shod as when you came out of the land of Egypt. Now, think about that. Does that not make you think about the Exodus? The language here is indicative of something that reminds me of the Exodus. It's going to be great. Did I sound a little Trump-esque there? It's going to be great. Make Israel great again. Now, whenever you look at this, now I want you to look down because there's no white space yet. So look at chapter 12, verse 1. And in that day you shall say, O Jehovah, I will praise you. You were angry with me, your anger is turned away. And you dost comfort me. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. For Jehovah Elohim is my strength and my song. Actually, that's Yah. Yah, Jehovah, is my strength and my song. And he also is become my salvation. Therefore, with joy shall you draw water out of the wells of salvation. And in that day shall you say, praise Jehovah, call upon his name, declare his doings among the people, make mention that his name is exalted. Sing unto Jehovah, for he's done excellent things. This also is known in all the earth. Cry out and shout, you inhabitants of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of you. Now, I want to tell you something about this particular passage. If you read this and you know your Bible, which I know you do, you should have flashes going off in your head connecting what you just read with something very much associated with the Exodus. You know what it reminds me of? Exodus chapter 15. You're singing it. I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and the rider thrown into the sea. This Exodus chapter 15, this particular song, if you read that, and we're not going to read that song yet, or part, it's not going to be in this particular class, but I want you to read it. I want you to think about this particular passage in Isaiah chapter 12, because In Exodus 15, by the way, in the beginning of chapter 15, verse 1, it says, "Then Moses and the children of Israel will sing." Now, your translation is going to say, "And the children of Israel and Moses sang this song," like they sang it. You know, it's reporting on it. But in Hebrew, it's an imperfect. I would translate that. Others might know Hebrew better than I. But I would translate that as "they will sing," almost as if Exodus 15 is a prophecy. And it does contain prophecy. If you read it, you will see that for yourself with your own eyes. What we're talking about in both Isaiah chapter 12, as long as when you look at Isaiah chapter 12 and you look at Exodus chapter 15, these are songs of salvation. They say some similar phrases. For instance, "He is my strength and my song." Exodus 15, Isaiah chapter 12. So what we do at United Israel is we connect things from the words in connection with the words and on the basis of the words. If it says in Exodus 15, "In my strength and my song," and I find that exact phrase in Isaiah 12, I pull them together because that's what we're supposed to do. It also uses this phrase, "become my salvation." He's become my salvation. But the picture presented in chapter 11 and 12 of Isaiah, what I just covered, is a picture of an exodus. It is an exodus. It's similar, you know, he says, you know, like it was when you came forth out of the land of Egypt. The name is exalted among the people. It says, "Excellent things, you've done excellent things, known in all the earth." Remember, the purpose of the Exodus, Exodus 1, was that God's name would be known in all the earth. And to this day, it pulled it off, right? Now, something I wanted to bring up, because I've got notes to use this in another class later. Notice where it says, "For great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of you." There are a lot of passages in the Hebrew Bible that talks about God in their midst or God in your midst. A good example is Exodus 25, verse 8 and 9, where it's talking about, "Make for me a sanctuary, a place of holiness, and I will dwell in their midst." Right? That's plural. It's a plural. It's talking about their midst. Here, this is interesting to me, in Isaiah chapter 12, "because great in your," singular, "in your midst." In you, basically. "Great is the Holy One of Israel." This seems to take things to a personal level. Now, some might not agree with that. They might think it's too theologically leaned in one direction or not. But I have that in a stack of notes that I'm assembling now for another class, for another day. Now, last week I read two passages. I want to read this particular passage again. Jeremiah chapter 16. Now, I know a lot of people love to say, go here, go there. You're welcome to do that because I don't read it while I'm working anyway. But I'm telling you, I'm going to cover a lot of text. You might be surprised. I'm not going to include every text which deals with this Exodus because you can't. It's one of the most dominant themes in all the Hebrew Bible, and we simply don't have time. But you're going to Jeremiah 16. I'm going to read 14 and 15, Jeremiah 16. "Behold, days are coming, says Jehovah, when it will no longer be said, 'As Jehovah lives, who brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt.'" Now that's a big deal. It's not even going to be said. "But as Jehovah lives, it brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands into which he had driven them, and I will bring them back into their land and that I gave their fathers." Go to Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23. In 23, I want to begin in verse 7. "Therefore, behold, days are coming, says Jehovah, when they shall no more say, 'As Jehovah lives, who brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt,' but 'As Jehovah lives, who brought up and who led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country and from all the countries into which I have driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. Now, many have taught about this deliverance. I have as well. The question is that I'm posing today, why is it that the former Exodus will be virtually forgotten, practically speaking, for all intents and purposes, as according to Jeremiah 16, Jeremiah 23, why? Now, there are a couple of simple answers, but I want to go through some of these ideas, go through them fairly quickly. In the former Exodus, what you have is Israel, the people of Israel are together in Egypt. They're all together. Now, I'm not saying it was an easy thing for God to go in with an outstretched arm and a strong hand and bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt with signs and wonders and displays of power. I'm not suggesting that that was easy. It's called the great thing, Deuteronomy chapter 4. We read it earlier. It's the thing for which God is known for to this day. What I am saying is that as miraculous as that was, the logistics of the latter Exodus are a bit more complex. Now, in my mind, I have verses going off all the time anyway, but now I'm thinking about all those verses. Is anything too hard for Jehovah? And the answer to that is no. So this is a huge ratcheted up event that I'm going to describe for you, but for God, it's not. I don't know if it's any more harder to do this. In the latter coming Exodus, what we're dealing with is something different. Go with me to the book of Leviticus, Leviticus chapter 26. We're talking about what makes this particular Exodus mo better than the former Exodus. Exodus 26, I want us to go to verse 33. This is what I'm telling you, is that Israel is scattered among all nations as a promised consequence for disobedience, which makes it seem like a little bit more difficult to bring them back. But here we go, 26:33, and I will scatter you among the heathen, and will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities laid waste. Then shall the land enjoy your Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate. Now, this particular portion of the text goes on and on, dealing with the scattering and so forth. I'll just kind of highlight a couple of points. Verse 38, you shall perish among the heathen, and the land of your enemies shall eat you up. But then when you get to verse 40, I'll just pick this one up. And they shall confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their fathers with their trespass, which they trespassed against me, and that also they've walked contrary to me, and that I've also walked contrary to them, and brought them into the land of their enemies. In other words, when they do this, when they begin to come forward with their words of confession about their sins, then only will their, get this, uncircumcised hearts be humbled, and then they will make amends for their sin. Who's going to make amends for their sin? They. You know how they're forgiven for their sins? They turn from their sins and they ask God to forgive them. Then, verse 42, will I remember my covenant with Yaakov, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham will I remember, and I'll remember the land. All right, verse 44. And yet for all that, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, nor will I abhor them to utterly destroy them or to break my covenant with them. For I am Jehovah their God. All right, so here's the idea. Israel is scattered as promised because of their sins. What they have to do to remedy that is confess those sins, right? It's a very clear message. They have to turn from their sins and confess their sins of their fathers and so forth. Now go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. I'm going to show you why this particular Exodus is greater. Exodus 4, and I want you to begin in verse 25. When you shall beget children and children's children, and you shall have remained long in the land, and shall deal corruptly, and make a carved idol, the likeness of anything, and shall do evil in the sight of Jehovah your God, to provoke him to anger. By the way, don't make any idols. People, even in modern day religion, who think it's okay to have icons and idols in their worship, they need to go back and read their Bible very closely and pray about this. Verse 26, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that you shall soon utterly perish from off the land into which you go over the Jordan to possess. You shall not prolong your days upon it, but shall utterly be destroyed. Now realize, children of Israel are not even in the land yet. And he's telling them this is what's going to happen. Verse 27, And Jehovah shall scatter you among the nations, and you shall be left few in number among the nations, where Jehovah shall lead you. And there you shall serve gods, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, which neither see nor hear nor eat nor smell. Now, if this isn't clear, you know, when people are looking for lost Israelites, they're looking for somebody who doesn't eat pork and who pinches a piece of the loaf of the bread off. They keep Saturdays. They've always done it. Grandmama did it, and we don't even know why. They wear a headscarf. They wear a zit or fringes on their garments. They don't eat shellfish. They're looking for all these signs. Listen, hello, what I want you to look for is people praying to idols. That's pretty much where you're going to find them. There you shall serve God, the work of men's hands, wood and stone, which neither hear nor see, smell. That's how you find them. That's where they're at today. These people love them some idols. That's a fact. All right. When you're in distress and all these things, verse 29, but from there, if from there you shall seek Jehovah your God, you shall find him if you seek for him with all your heart and all your soul. Notice the thing. You're going to be scattered, but if from there you seek God. But from there, you're going to seek God. But from there, if you confess your sins, you see, it's giving them the stage for the great redemption. What happens that leads to the exodus from Egypt? God says, I heard the cry of the people. I heard the cry of the people. And he had compassion. So what's going to cause the second exodus? He hears the cry of the people. What has been is that which shall be. There's nothing new under the sun. The same God that was over the first exodus is still sitting in the throne for the second exodus. It's the way that you reach him is the way you reached him before. His number hath not changed. Now, go with me while we're in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy 28. And again, this is page after page of what we call the curse of the law, right? Or the curses of the law, as people refer to them. Chapter 28, I want to read just one verse, verse 64. Jehovah shall scatter you among all peoples. Make sure the Hebrew says all peoples. Yep. All right. Among all the peoples. Behold, ha'amim, from one end of the earth to the other. How scattered is that? He says, I'm going to scatter you among all people from one end of the heaven to the other. And watch this. Here we go. And there you shall serve other gods. Huh. It's like I've read this before, which neither you nor your fathers have known, wood and stone. Look, if you have a god made of wood or stone or gold or silver or somewhere, get it out. Get it out. Cast it from you. And among these nations, You shall find no ease, neither shall the sole of your foot have rest, but Jehovah shall give you there a trembling heart, failing eyes, and so forth and so on. So the idea, once again, is that they are scattered through all nations. The prophet Amos says in Amos chapter, Amos chapter 9, I will sift them through the nations as corn is sifted through a sieve, yet not the least grain will fall to the ground. My eyes are on all their ways. See, he says that the children of Israel will be scattered throughout all nations like you would shake like this, just all over. And look, not it's all over. You can't tell. You're not going to find them with the right nose or, you know, You ever hear people say, "Well, you got a little Jewish nose there. You got Jewish hair. You have oh, stop it!" Listen, here's what they look like today. I learned this song in Sunday school when I was a little bitty boy: red and yellow, black and white. Right? That's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a certain look. God, remember the story of David? God doesn't look at the outside; he's looking at the heart. He's looking for a certain heart. That's what he's looking for. Now, all right, Isaiah chapter 11, the text that we talked about, Isaiah chapter 11 listed places, you know, these various places where he's going to reach his hand again a second time. You know, and it gives a few, and it says, and the isles of the sea, you know, where is that? Different people have different understandings of that. But now, what I want to stress to you is that this Exodus, the latter Exodus, is going to require phases, and here's what the Hebrew prophets call it: assemble, gather. Assemble, gather. Here's what happened with the children of Israel in the first Exodus. Gather. You bring them back. You don't have to bring them together first. They're all together. They're in Egypt. We know where they are. My eyes are on all their ways. They're not scattered. They're right here. I got them all in one place. I'm going to bring them out. Not that that's not a great thing. It is a great thing. This one is different. You can't find them all pocketed up together. Best way to find them today is go into a place of worship where they have idols. That's a pretty good place to look for them, because that's what it says they're going to be doing. Right? I mean, that's what it says. Now, at some point, these people who truly love God, and I think many of them do, their heart is after God, they're just going to throw those idols away and say, we don't need them. All right, now, go with me to Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 43. Isaiah 43. And I want to pick up in verse 3. Isaiah 43:3, for I am Jehovah your God, the Holy One of Israel, your deliverer. I gave Egypt for your ransom, Cush and Seva instead of you. Since you were precious in my sight, you were honored, and I have loved you. Therefore, I'll give men for thee and people for your life. Fear not, for I am with you. I will bring your seed from the east. Gather you from the west. I will say to the north, give up, and to the south, keep not back. Bring my sons from far and my daughters from the ends of the earth, everyone that's called by my name. For I've created him for my glory. I've formed him, yea, I've made him. Bring forth the blind people that have eyes, the deaf that have ears. Let all the nations be gathered together. Let the people be assembled. Who among them can declare this and announce to us former things? Let them bring forward their witnesses, and so forth and so on. I hate to stop there, but I've got a lot to cover. So get this. He says, look, let them go. Give up, he says to the north, give up to the south, east, west, from all the ends of the earth. They're everywhere. They're scattered everywhere. They're logging on to Ancestry.com thinking they're going to find some Jewish gene. We're talking about something that goes beyond that, because we're talking about, I mean, just consider the patriarchs. Do we know the handmaidens of Leah and Rachel? Do we know what they were? You know? I mean, we don't know. Who were they? Are they Israelite?
No, Israel's not even a people yet. See, so but what I'm saying is these people are all over. It's a mixing. In fact, that's what the prophet Hosea says. But anyway, we'll get there. Isaiah 49. Again, I had to just decide which ones to pull in and which ones not to pull in. Go to Isaiah 49, verse 12 and 13. Behold, these shall come from far. You keep seeing that word, don't you? It's a long way. How much is far? It's a long way. Behold, these shall come from far, and lo, these from the north and from the west. These from the land of Sinim. Sing, O heavens, be joyful, O earth. Break forth into singing, O mountains, for Jehovah has comforted his people and has mercy upon the afflicted. Notice the key points here. These people are scattered. They're going to come from far away, the north, the west. Here it says the land of Sinim. There's singing associated with this, just like in the former Exodus. And notice he has had mercy on this people. Mercy is a key point. Now, I want you to look with me to Isaiah chapter 60. Isaiah chapter 60. And verse 4. Lift up your eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far. Your daughters shall be nursed at your side. Interesting. They're going to come from far. I mean, it's saying the same thing in all these texts. Look down at verse 8. I love this one. Who are these who fly as a cloud and as doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me. Skip down. Bring thy sons from far. I mean, it just goes on and on and on that the people who are scattered are coming back. Where are they? Where are they, Ross? Look at Jeremiah chapter 3. Jeremiah 3, verse 18. In those days the house of Judah shall walk with the house of Israel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I've given as an inheritance to your fathers. Jeremiah 31. John Baruch is going to have his hands full on this one because I've got a few more. Jeremiah 31, verse 6. For thus says Jehovah, sing with gladness for Yaakov and shout on the hilltops of the nations. Announce, praise, and say, O Jehovah, save your people, the remnant of Israel. Behold, I will bring them from the north country, gather them from the ends of the earth. And with them the blind, the lame, the woman with child, and her that travails with child together. A great company shall return there. They'll come with weeping, with supplications will I lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of waters in a straight way, in which they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Ephraim. Ephraim is the son of God. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 22, remember, it says, God tells Moses, go tell Pharaoh, let my son go. Israel is my firstborn. Well, we're talking about a new Exodus. Ephraim is the main tribe of which that's missing, right? It becomes the name whereby the northern kingdom is called. And when they go into exile, often the prophets refer to Ephraim or Joseph, the house of Joseph. I believe that when I teach, I'm often speaking to many who are part of the house of Joseph, whether they know it or not. But just like in the former Exodus, you got to tell the rulers of the day, let my son go. This place, very clearly, Ephraim is my son. Now look at chapter 31, verse 14. Thus says Jehovah, a voice was heard in Ramah. This whole chapter is about the restoration. A voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation, bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted for her children because they are not. This is not about the killing of infants. Why is she weeping? Because her children have been killed. No, they haven't. They're not dead. She's weeping because she doesn't know where they are. Can you imagine you lose your child, your child's missing. He's like, he was right here. I don't know. You're running around and you're, this is why she's weeping. But notice this. Thus says Jehovah, keep back your voice from weeping, your eyes from tears, for your work shall be rewarded, says Jehovah. And they shall come back again from the land of the enemy. Your children are coming back. This is the whole message of Jeremiah 31. There is hope for your future, verse 16, says Jehovah. And your children shall come back again to their own border. Wow. Hosea, go to the prophet Hosea. Hosea chapter 11. Hosea 11, verse 1. When Israel was a child, I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Who is the son that gets called out of Egypt? I know what other people said later, but this is talking about Israel. When Israel was a child, I loved him and I called my son out of Egypt. Just talking about the Exodus. This is what we're talking about, the greatest thing that ever happened. Now, look down at verse 10. Because, by the way, between verse 1 and 10, what it's talking about is Israel's a child. God said, I loved him. I taught him how to walk. He even gives this beautiful picture where he pulls the child up to his cheek and he kisses him. You know, it's like he taught him how to walk. It's his baby. Israel's his baby. He said, I taught him how to walk. But Israel walked after other gods. There we go with that other gods things. Idols, beautiful statues. We just associate them with our worship like it's okay. It's just a pretty little representation. I use it to focus. It's not really an idol. Yes, it's an idol. Mm-hmm. All right. So then when you go down to verse 10, he says, they shall walk after Jehovah, who shall roar like a lion. When he shall roar, then the children shall come trembling from the west. Wait a minute. Trembling from the west. See, this is interesting. The prophets tell us, where are they? Well, they're scattered all over. But notice a lot of the primary concentration is north and west. North and west. Interesting. It's like the prophets wanted us to know. They do want us to know. God wants us to know if we just simply read. Now, all of these texts, I want you to get this. In the former Exodus, remember I said one of the common phrases occurs over and over and over. Shalak et ami, send forth my people. Let my people go. Shalak et ami, shalak et ami. Something hit me this week. In the latter Exodus, his people have become lo-ami. You would say, shalak et ami, send forth my people. How would you say, send forth not my people? You realize that the children of Israel, the people of God, become not my people. Something has to happen. They have to return to the God of their fathers. Go with me to Isaiah chapter 44. Isaiah chapter 44. I'm just going to give you a little indication, a little snippet of what the prophets say will lead to them becoming Ami again. See, they're lo Ami right now, not my people. They have to become Ami. Apart, they have to confess their sins, throw away idols, all that kind of stuff I've been stressing. I'm doing that for a reason. It's very important. It's very biblical. It is the word of Jehovah straight from Scripture, right? I'm not making this up. I'm not doing it to be mean or ugly. I'm just trying to convey a strong message. Isaiah chapter 44, listen to this, verse 1. Yet hear now, O Jacob, my servant, and Israel, whom I've chosen. Thus says Jehovah that made me, inform me from the womb, who will keep thee. Fear not, O Jacob, my servant. Notice, remember I said that the whole purpose was that they might serve him. They're not going to be a servant of Pharaoh. They're going to be a servant, my servant, Jacob, my servant. Jacob, my servant, and you, Yeshurun, whom I have chosen. Remember in Deuteronomy 33, when we talked about the fire law, Israel was referred to as Yeshurun. For I will pour water upon thirsty land and floods upon the dry ground. I will pour my spirit upon your seed and my blessing upon your offspring. They shall spring up as among the grass, as willows by the watercourses. Now get this. What are they going to say when the Holy Spirit hits them? Are you ready? One shall say, I am Jehovah's. And another shall call himself by the name of Jacob. And another shall subscribe with his hand to Jehovah and surname himself by the name of Israel. Look, there are a lot of people out there mocking and laughing. Oh, these Gentiles think they're Israel. What, they don't have Isaiah 44 in their Bible? No, they don't read it. They mock and they laugh. How is it that God's going to wake his people up? They will have become lo-ami. They're going to become part of the non-Jewish world. They're going to be eaten up, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 says. The land will devour you. It's very clear. If you read, go to Deuteronomy chapter 30, please. Deuteronomy chapter 30. And I'm just going to read beginning in verse 1. Now, you know me. You know this is my favorite book, my favorite chapter. But I'm only going to read 6 verses because I put 6 in my notes, and that's what I'm going to do. And it will come to pass, when all these things are come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I've set before you. They're not in the land. They've not gone in yet. He tells them the blessings and the curses are going to come upon you. It's both going to come upon you. And then it says, and then you'll return to your heart. Now, the English generally says, and you'll call them to mind. But I'm going to go ahead and correct that. And you shall return to your heart among all the nations into which Jehovah your God has driven you. And you shall return to Jehovah your God, and you shall obey his voice according to all that I command you this day, you and your children, with all your heart, with all your soul. And then Jehovah your God will turn your captivity and have compassion upon you, and will return and gather you from all the nations amongst whom Jehovah your God has scattered you. If you're outcast, get this, be at the utmost part of heaven, from there Jehovah your God will gather you, and from there will he fetch you. Jehovah your God will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it. And he will do you good, multiply you more than your fathers, and Jehovah your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your seed to love Jehovah your God with all your heart, with all your soul, that you may live. You realize that Deuteronomy chapter 30 is prophecy? Like a lot of people think the Torah is all just history. This is prophecy. None of this has happened. You could say it's happening. Like people are beginning among the nations to which they've been scattered. They're returned to their heart. They're seeking God. But the returning of the captivity, literally the return of the returning, has not happened yet. It's in the process whereby people are confessing their sins of their fathers. People are correcting their faith, aligning their faith in practice, even giving up things that they firmly believe that don't find support in the Scripture or which contradict plainly Scripture. That's what's happening. That's called returning to your heart, ladies and gentlemen. You're doing it. Congratulations. Making a move. Please go with me to the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah chapter 10. Zechariah 10. And I want to read beginning in verse 6. Zechariah 10, verse 6. And I will strengthen the house of Judah. And I will save the house of Joseph, and I will bring them back again, for I have mercy on them, and they shall be as though I had not cast them off. For I am Jehovah their God, and will hear them. And they of Ephraim shall be like a mighty man, and their hearts shall rejoice as though through wine, and their children shall see it and be glad. Their hearts shall rejoice in Jehovah. I will whistle to them and gather them, for I have redeemed them, and they shall increase as they have before increased. And get this, I will sow them among the people, and they shall remember me in far countries. And they shall live with their children and shall return.
And I will bring them back out of the land of Egypt and gather them out of Assyria. And I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon so that there will be no room for them. And they shall pass through the sea with affliction and smite the waves in the sea. And all the deeps of the river shall dry up. What does that sound like? This is another text which indicates a similarity to the Exodus. We're talking about water drying up in the return. But don't think that any of this happens or that you will be part of it if you hadn't straightened out the thing which caused the dispersion in the first place. Idolatry is key. Making the image and associating that with worship is one of the biggest problems in the religious world today. According to the Bible. Now, if you don't believe the Bible, it's no big deal. I mean, it is a big deal. It's a huge deal. But I'm just saying, it's a big, big deal if you believe Scripture. Go with me. What has to happen, let me say this first. What has to happen is you and I need a heart change, a change of heart. Something has to happen on the inside. This needs to be an inside job. Go with me to the prophet Ezekiel, Yehezekiel, and I want you to go to Ezekiel chapter 11. Ezekiel 11. And let's just start in verse 16. Therefore, thus says Jehovah Elohim. For thus says Adonai Jehovah. Although I have cast them far off among the nations, and although I've scattered them among the countries, and I've been to them a little sanctuary in the countries where they have come. I love that. It's also in Isaiah chapter 8, verse 14, by the way. I've been to them a little sanctuary. You go, what do we do without the Mishkan? Jehovah is the Mishkan. He says it right here. Therefore, thus says Adonai Jehovah, verse 17, yet will I gather you from the people and assemble you out of the countries where you've been scattered. And I'll give you the land of Israel, and they shall come there, and they shall take away all the detestable things of it and all the abominations of it from there. And I will give them one heart, and I will put a new spirit within you. And I will take the stony heart out of the flesh and will give them a heart of flesh that they may walk in my statutes, keep my ordinances, and do them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God. How's that? He says, I'm going to bring you out. I'm going to take your stony heart out, and I'm going to replace it with a heart of flesh. And I'm going to put a new spirit in you. That's what we need, right? Now go to Ezekiel 36. Ezekiel 36. And let's just start in verse 24, Ezekiel 36, verse 24. For I will take you from among the nations and gather you out of all countries, and I'll bring you into your own land, and I'll sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleanness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. Think God's concerned about idols? Verse 26, a new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. And get this, and I will put my spirit within you and cause you to follow my statutes, and you'll keep my judgments and do them. And you shall dwell in the land that I gave to your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I'll be your God, and I will save you from all your uncleannesses, and I will summon the corn and make it abundant and lay no famine upon you, and I will make the fruit of the tree. It goes on and on about the blessings that he's going to bring. Jeremiah. Go to Jeremiah 32. Jeremiah 32. Beginning in verse 37.
I will gather them out of the countries into which I've driven them in my anger and in my fury and in great wrath, and I'll bring them back to this place, cause them to dwell safely, and they shall be my people, and I'll be their God. Remember, this was part of the curse, that they were not his people, and he was not their God. Lo Ami. See, he's going to make them his people. And I will give them one heart, one way, that they may fear me forever for their good, and that their children after them. And I'll make an everlasting covenant with them. I'll not turn away from doing good to them, but I'll put my fear in their hearts, that they shall not turn aside from me. And I will rejoice over them to do them good. And I will truly plant them in this land with my whole heart and with my whole soul. Once again, the children of Israel will be brought into the wilderness. Ezekiel chapter 20. I'm not going to give you a break. I'm going to go ahead and go there. I started to give you a break, but this is important. Ezekiel 20, verse 33. Man. Okay, I'm not going to begin in verse 30, but I want you to write this down and go back, because it's really talking about defiling yourself with idols and so forth. God says right before verse 31, towards the end, "As I live, says Adonai Jehovah, I will not be inquired of by you, and that which comes into your mind shall never come about. What you say will be like the nations, like the families of the countries to serve wood and stone." He's saying, I'm not even going to listen to that. Because what Israel has done is they've become so comfortable in among the nations. And remember, that's what they want. I want to be like the nations. It's why they set up the monarchy. Even though Deuteronomy 17 says, you're going to ask for this. Is that what God wanted? 1 Samuel chapter 8, 1 Samuel chapter 12, 1 Samuel chapter 15 God says they've rejected me from being king over them, and that they've asked for a king. How many kings really did a good job? Not many, except Jehovah, right? All right, now look, but I am going to start in verse 33. "As I live, says Adonai Jehovah, surely with a mighty hand, with a stretched out arm, and with anger poured out, I will be king over you, and I will bring you out from the peoples, will gather you out of the countries into which you were scattered with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with anger poured out. And I'll bring you into the wilderness of the peoples, and there will remonstrate with you face to face as I remonstrated with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt. So I'll remonstrate with you, says Adonai Jehovah. I'll cause you to pass under the rod, and I'll bring you into the discipline of the covenant. And I'll purge out from among you the rebels and them that transgress against me. And I'll bring them out of the country where they sojourn. They shall not enter into the land of Israel, and you'll know that I am Jehovah." Then he gets back into the idols. So what's going to happen is God's going to bring the people, assemble, and then gather them to the wilderness of the people. They have to pass under a rod. Like a shepherd would allow sheep and goats to come under the rod and figure out which ones are his, which ones aren't. He describes the wilderness in Ezekiel 20. He also describes in Hosea chapter 2, it says, and I'm just going to give you this, he says, "I will allure her into the wilderness and there betroth her to me." He's going to go back into a covenant with his people, and it says he's going to speak tenderly to her heart. That's the language of Isaiah chapter 40. You read Isaiah chapter 40 through 66, you get all this stuff as well. So the idea is that God's going to bring them back into the wilderness, get back into, make a new covenant. Jeremiah 31, verse 31. "Behold, days are coming, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand and brought them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, though I was a husband to them. But this is the covenant that I will make with them on those days. I'll forgive their sins." Now, remember, it says further that no longer will they say every man, learn, you know the Lord, for they'll all know Jehovah, from the least of them to the greatest of them. But here's the thing. This is a new covenant. It's not like the covenant that he made with the children of Israel when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. Wow. What's different about it? Are there things that are similar or the things that are different? I'll give you one. It's not going to be written on stone. It's going to be written on your heart. And if you have a stone heart, it won't be written on your stone heart either. It's going to be written on the new heart. It's going to be written. This covenant will be written. But see, this testimony, you won't need an ark. Let me say it this way. Let me add this. The God of the Exoduses. Can I say it in the plural now? The Exodi. Introduced himself to Moses as Ehye Asher Ehye. I will be what I will be. Or I'll be whatever I will be. However you translate that. He also says something. He says, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. The children of Israel were scattered. Jezreel, remember the story in Hosea the prophet? He marries a harlot, has children, names the first one Jezreel, God will scatter. He names the second child Lo Ruhamah, no mercy. He names the final child Lo Ami, not my people. He says, because this is what happens to Israel. They're going to be scattered. They're not going to receive mercy. Now, Judah is going to receive mercy. He said, I'm going to take care of Judah separately. And then he says, ultimately, they'll not be my people. So you got to reverse that. You have to be the people. You have to have mercy. And then you have to be gathered. See, it's a backwards walking into the family of Hosea. Take that child off, not my people. Take that child off, no mercy. Take that scattering away. Now, go with me to Jeremiah 3. I'm winding down. Jeremiah 3. Verse 11. Jehovah said to me, faithless Israel has proved herself more just than treacherous Judah. Go and proclaim these words toward the north and say, return, thou faithless Israel, says Jehovah, and I will not frown upon you, for I am merciful, says Jehovah, and I will not bear a grudge forever. Only acknowledge your iniquity. There we go again. That you have transgressed against Jehovah your God and have scattered your ways to the strangers under every green tree, and you have not obeyed my voice, says Jehovah. Turn, O faithless children, says Jehovah, for I have taken you to myself. I will take you one from a city, two from a family, and I'll bring you to Zion. I'll give you shepherds according to my heart who will feed you with knowledge and understanding. And it will come to pass when you multiply and increase in the land in those days, says Jehovah, they shall no more say the ark of the covenant of Jehovah, nor shall it come to mind, nor shall they remember it, nor shall they miss it, nor shall that be done anymore. At that time, they'll call Jerusalem the throne of Jehovah, and all the nations shall be gathered to it, to the name of Jehovah, to Jerusalem. Nor shall they walk any more after the stubbornnesses of their evil heart. You won't need an ark of the covenant, an ark of the testimony to hold the testimony as a separate box because it will be written on the heart. It's a new covenant. It's not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt. Now, Hosea chapter 14, verse 2 and 3 says, return to me with words. What are you going to bring with you? Micah chapter 6, verse 6 through 8 is another interesting passage. What do I bring? You bring your heart, you bring your soul, you bring yourself, and you offer up your prayers. You return, your heart has to return. It's always been about an inheritance. That doesn't change. The Morashah, Deuteronomy chapter 33:2 says that a fire law, God gave a Torah as the inheritance for Israel. That is what God's going to do again. gives us instruction. The second thing that's called a morashah is in Exodus chapter 6, verse 8, and it's the land. He's going to give land and covenant. Now, what is the covenant? Isaiah 59. Isaiah 59, verse 21. As for me, this is my covenant with them, says Jehovah. My spirit that is upon thee, and my words which I have put in your mouth shall not depart out of your mouth, nor out of the mouth of your seed, nor out of the mouth of your seed, says Jehovah, from henceforth and forever. Remember in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 11 through 14, it's not in heaven. It's not beyond the sea. The word is very near to you. It's in your mouth and in your heart to do it. This is what God wants us. He wants us, yes, to say the right things, but he wants our heart to be right. Deuteronomy 5, verse 29, oh, that they had such a heart as this to keep my commandments, basically. Because he knows it'll go well with us if we do. Lo ami must become ami. Not my people have to become my people. The fire law must be written on their circumcised heart. Remember in the first Passover, you had to be circumcised to eat the Passover? Well, I got news for you. You have to be circumcised of heart to participate in this one. You ought to start working on it. Deuteronomy 10 says so, but Deuteronomy 30 says that God will finish up if you don't do a good job. But you got to have a circumcised heart to be part of this Exodus. In the former Exodus, Moses, Miriam, and the Israelites sang. In the coming Exodus, Jehovah himself will sing. I can't wait for this moment. It's mentioned in Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 14. Sing, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all your heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. Jehovah has taken away your judgments. He's cast out your enemy, the king of Israel. Jehovah's in the midst of you. You shall not see evil anymore. In that day it will be said to Jerusalem, fear not. And to Zion, let not your hands be slack. Jehovah, your God, is in the midst of you, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will be silent in his love. He will joy over you with singing. This is Jehovah. Verse 18, those that mourn far away from the festive assembly do I gather. They were yours who had borne for thee the burden of insult. Behold, at that time I will undo all that afflict thee. I'll save her who limps and gather her that was driven out. I will get them praise and fame who had been put to shame in all the earth. At that time will I bring you in, and at that time I will gather you. For I will make you a name and a praise among all the people of the earth when I restore your captivity before your eyes, says Jehovah. Now listen to this. In the former Exodus, Jehovah made himself a name. In the future Exodus, you might have missed this. I will make you a name and a praise among all the people of the earth when I restore your captivity before your eyes, says Jehovah. We have some work to do. Think about these things. Think about the Exoduses, the God of the Exoduses. And if that was the great thing, what's this one? Shabbat Shalom.